Beyond the Lamplight both starts and ends this podcast.
Yes, they do.
Indeed. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Those Rules Don't Apply to Us, the podcast. My name is Mackenzie Makinich, and sitting to my right is my best friend,
Andy Gates.
Good to see you again.
Yeah. Ooh, it's been a couple minutes.
Yeah. Minutes.
Yeah.
How was your time away?
It was pretty good. You know, checked on the flood in the garage. Seems right.
Mm, yeah. Not good times in Andy's garage.
Mm.
Kind of giving away our... our secret headquarters, like the Batcave, where we do this podcast from.
Yeah, totally different place.
Yeah, kind of like the Batcave.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about what would be a favorite band from both of us, and a band that, ironically, we've both actually only seen once together, even though we've seen this band many times. Pearl Jam.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh.
They are good.
They are good. I agree. Yeah. The reason we wanted to talk about them is because there's a lot of chatter about Pearl Jam recently. They have a new album that's going to be coming out this spring. They are finally going back out on tour.
And that first song they released is fucking dope.
It really is. Well done. Especially Andrew Watts, if you're listening. Good job, bud. Pearl Jam's going to be coming to Seattle, and we are going to be going to both of those shows. As of recording time, we do not have tickets, and neither one of us are concerned in the least about that whatsoever.
And he made a declarative statement. We will be at both shows.
We will be at both shows. We will have extremely good seats. We will be up toward, not even seats, we'll be up towards the front.
You lead with your intention, and then thoughts, words, and actions from here on out are try to manifest exactly what we know is going to happen.
Right. Like this is
part of the
manifestation, for sure.
It is part of the magic.
For example, about just what our intentions are with all this, you know, when we started talking to folks last week, when it was putting out there that it's going to be options to purchase these tickets, I was very clear when I sent the message out to a lot of my friends, my girlfriend included. And I said, I'm going to these shows. This is what I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be in line all day long. It's not going to be amazing. I'm going to be up in the front. This is going to be like a 14-hour commitment every day. If you would like to join me, I'd love to have you along. But, you know, that's what I'm doing.
No, seriously, it's the show's about what you want to do that day. And again, you know, people want to come, great, that's cool and all, but, you know, I feel the same way. I assume we'll be together and whatnot, because as we usually are at stuff like this, but we're going to do what we're going to do. And it's going to be kind of packed. We want to get close enough up front. It's going to be kind of butts to nuts. And, you know, if you're not up for that, you know, maybe we're not the guys you go to the show with.
Mm-hmm. Packed like sardines too. So we're going to talk about it through our experience at the shows together in 2018. And You're packed in there. If you want to be on the floor and up close like we are, it's an experience.
It's work, quite honestly.
It's exhausting.
Yeah, it's work.
It's very, very exhausting. It's not for everyone. You know, I think there's going to be people that are going to be listening to this, and I've definitely had friends say, like, God, I would never do that. Well, I would never sit up like in the stands for a show like that, and especially up like in the top, up near the rafters. I literally would not go, even for free. Like, that's just, I don't want to be there. I want to be down close. I want to be up in front of McCready. I want to feel that guitar going absolutely through my body.
Yep.
That's what I want. That's the experience I want. And that's what's going to happen. So, as I also kind of mentioned earlier, okay, so they're finally coming back around, which it's been, I can't believe it's been 6 years.
Fuckers. They've done multiple world goddamn tours since then, and they don't come to Seattle. Shit, I've seen them in goddamn California more times.
Yeah.
No, seriously, in the last couple of years than I've ever fucking seen them in Seattle. I don't understand it.
Yeah, I saw them in 2021, I think it was, down in at the Ohana Fest. And what was interesting, though, is they didn't – I mean, I understand that they – you know, they put Gigaton out during the pandemic and then everything got thrown off. I get it, but it was just odd that they didn't go on like a real world tour after that. But at the very least, play Seattle? You know, we've gotten to see Eddie Vedder solo a couple times since then, and it's been great. It's an amazing consolation prize. You can maybe even argue those shows are sometimes better. But
I have another bone to pick with them. I do. They do a whole lot of good. They do charity shows. They donate to a lot of causes. They promote a lot of causes and all that. The one thing that still kind of bothers me to this day is that they did not do any sort of benefit show to save the show box. If any band had the ability to actually pull this off, it was Pearl Jam.
Agreed that they probably could. I think you and I differ on that a little bit. I feel like, and you led with it, is like that band has done so much. I would argue maybe they've done more than any active band out there for so many causes and so many things that I feel like they don't owe anybody anything.
I led with credit, but I also get to, you know, criticize what I think, you know, could have been a really grand gesture for a place they call their hometown, even though I think only McCready maybe lives here anymore, quite honestly.
Well, I think actually all of them except for Jeff, they all live here.
Oh, right.
Yeah, they're all still local.
Well, there's no fucking excuse then, bunch of jerks.
That's his words, not mine. Love you guys.
Yeah, because Eddie's going to hear this.
So there is a lot to talk about this. And before we even talk about like the actual performance, you know, as you've mentioned before, first you got to even get tickets for the show. Getting tickets to these shows is not easy. As you and I have mentioned, like, you know, we sometimes don't even have tickets before we even go to concerts and we're not worried about it. The Pearl Jam ones are a little bit different. You have to understand that there is a lot of high demand for these, and there are people from all over the world that want these tickets, especially when they play in Seattle.
Yeah, we're not just competing with local market sort of people looking to go to the show. That's Seattle. And again, it's a home show. They call it the home show.
Yeah, it's a really big deal when those happen because it's so rare. Again, this has been 6 years since the last one. These new ones coming up, the Climate Pledge, are going to be even harder to get because it's a smaller venue than these shows that were in 2018. That was at Safeco Field, the baseball stadium.
I forgot it was a Climate Pledge. Crap.
Yeah. So for context, I think they did 50,000 people a night at Safeco, whereas Climate Pledge is, I'll guess, and say 22,000 max.
Yeah, maybe 25 with the floor. Yeah.
Right. So we're going to have our work put out for us to, you know, getting in there. But again, I'm not concerned in the least. With that said, so Pearl Jam 10 Club is a route that you can go through at times to get tickets. I've got a little bit of a bone to pick with them. I'm starting to get to there. I know Andy's like, love you guys. and it's just based on recent experiences. So for Climate Pledge, for instance, I've been a Pearl Jam 10 Club member for, I'll guess, and say 7 or 8 years now. I don't think I've ever gotten a ticket through them for any Pearl Jam, Eddie Vedder related thing since the home shows. I've put in for all the lotteries. I've never gotten anything. Yet then there's other people like our friend Laura that gets like 30 tickets for all their shows. I don't understand how that.
She's lovely. We love you.
We do
think
love
of
you.
Us.
We do love you, Laura, but yeah, we're a little bitter on this and a little jealous.
No, it's just wee shit. I'm totally pro-Laura right now.
Look at you kissing up.
I am too.
So anyway, I just found out today that I'm not going to be getting tickets through Pearl Jam 10 Club for the upcoming home shows. However, in 2018, I was lucky enough to get tickets through the Pearl Jam 10 Club for one of the nights. And then for the other night, a friend of mine at the time worked for Pearl Jam, and she was able to hook up. I still had to pay for the tickets, but she was able to hook up an opportunity for me to purchase tickets on the floor for that. And that was it. We were in. We had our tickets. And
talking about, you know, we're going to be in, this is one of those bands where you do get a little nervous and twitchy the closer we get to it if we don't have tickets.
Yeah.
I'm still more of the, we'll get there. We'll get there. Your brain starts going to, you know, ooh, ha, a little bit. And you're, and again, rightfully, you know, it's okay to think about it, but I think you're more likely to pull the trigger the closer it gets for maybe an opportunity or an option that you normally wouldn't if it wasn't, honestly, like one of your absolute favorite bands.
Yeah. And because they are about at the top of the heap as well. Yeah. You know, Pearl Jam is, probably my top three, something like that, of the favorites of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So for these ones, you know, when you go to the show, of course, merch is a really big deal for Pearl Jam, especially the resellers market, and people go absolutely bananas for that stuff. We had both decided that we didn't want to be purchasing merch at the venue and then have to hold on to it, especially if there's posters and all this stuff. So a really cool thing, at least for this one that Pearl Jam did, was right across the street from Safeco Field in a big empty parking lot. I think it was 2 days earlier because the first show was on a Wednesday, and on the Monday, they set up a gigantic merch booth and tent where you could go and get stuff. I went down there on that Monday to get things, get posters for us, and I was thinking, it's a Monday afternoon. There'll probably be like 30 people in line. There was about 200 people in line for that.
I was like waiting for a ride at Disneyland, for Christ's sake. So you had the barricades with the zigzag and the shit, and everyone was in line, and yeah.
And if I do remember, like by then, like all, and I mean, I went down there probably 11 a.m. or something, and there were items that were already sold out. Like you just couldn't even get them. But I got a couple of the Pearl Jam. I got the Home Show's T-shirt. I got that amazing poster of the kind of like, it looks like a baseball ticket, a ticket for a baseball game.
Yeah.
And I'll post a photo of that on the Facebook page. And that's part of the process. You know, go get your merch a couple of days earlier. It's not cheap. The merch is not cheap whatsoever.
Yeah. And it is sort of different if you're going for posters. We have a lot of posters. Posters are valuable to us, especially for some of these special shows. We frame them, we put them up, you know, and there's value to them. Those, if you're going to be on the floor in a pit, you actually have to think ahead. This is not the kind of thing where you just buy it and you hold it and it's just held together with a rubber band all night long. It's going to have some issues. I mean, at a minimum, bring yourself a cardboard tube, you know, to put it in. But even then, do you really want to hold that thing all day long? So this was part of our plan for this. Pearl Jam's posters are usually pretty fucking awesome. The Ames Brothers posters, those are keepers for sure. I like those a lot. So we definitely made the effort to get down there before, take care of the poster side of it, and then we don't have to worry about a day show.
Right. Just get all that out of the way and then focus on the shows. So that leads us to Wednesday of that day. Well, I'll take a slight break. So for me, I still to this day consider that one of the greatest weeks of rock music I've ever had in my entire life. I've been to South by Southwest before. That's probably about on the same lines, but it's different because I wasn't seeing shows that meant so much to my heart. And I will go into more of those. But that Tuesday night, I went and saw Joe Doria at the Sea Monster. And he had R.L. Hyer with him, and I can't remember. Maybe it was Tarek who was on drums with him that night. And I got to watch R.L. Hyer do Eruption by Van Halen, which, yes, that's guitar. Yeah. That's Meltdown. That's Face Meltdown.
Shit, even
stuff.
McCready plays that at Pearl Jam shows.
Yeah. If you don't know who those two gentlemen are, you can go see Joe Doria every Tuesday night at the Sea Monster in Seattle. It's a free show. It's like from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Throw some money in the thing on the stage, though. Tip them well. But
In my opinion, the best Hammond B3 player in the city, and I've often joked, but it's not a joke, that he plays better bass with his left foot than I play with two hands.
I've seen you play bass. It's not even fucking close.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, way to go, Joe's Left Foot. Yeah.
That'd be a band name.
Yeah, Joe's Left Foot is my name. So that's how I started off my week. I went to that Face Shredder. I took time off basically all week. I don't even know if I worked one day that whole week. I don't remember anymore. That was a long time ago.
I was in a different phase of life. It was less than a week later that we took our oldest, Jessie, and dropped her off at her freshman year in college. Mm. I didn't have the time and availability to do that week. We were talking today, and like I said, in a different podcast, it's like, you should have been there. Like, you're absolutely right. I should have been there. But believe it or not, there are times where, you know, I understand what the responsibilities as a dad and a husband are. And that's what I chose to do.
Yeah, fair enough. You've definitely done that more than once, and respectable for sure. So here comes Wednesday, and the two of us had tickets that day for, we had floor tickets. And so what that process is like, you don't just get off work like 5 o'clock, maybe go home, have a meal, get a shower, and casually drive down to the venue at 7 when the show is going to start at 8 and go in and hang out the floor. That's not how that works. That might work for like people that sit up in seats, but not for the floor. Way, way, way different experience. For floor tickets, the way they do it is it's a first come, first served. It's not a lottery, but it's basically just a lineup outside for people who have pit tickets. And people start lining up literally a day, sometimes 2 days in advance for the folks that like want to be up in the absolute front.
Some of those lines, though, they can be managed differently. Ultimately, you know, either with the permission of the venue or the band, or if it's just fan run, you're never really sure. I think this one ended up being fan run, and no one said no. No one was a dick. We didn't have any issues or problems. And if you're going to do a fan run line, seriously, you know, get in line, wait your turn, do the thing. You got a much better chance of the venue saying, hey, they haven't been a problem. They've been cool. Let's honor it.
Mm-hmm. I want to say that first day we got down there probably about 9 a.m., something like that, and got into line because we knew that there were people lined up overnight, again, to get in. It was early in August. It was hot. Not insanely hot, but if I remember, it was like probably mid-80s or something. And we were outside in that heat, basically just sitting, standing, you know, squatting, stretching. You know, you can take time off. You know, like you said, everybody's cool. It's like if you need to go make a bathroom break and like you would go, we would each take a break and like, hey, I'm going to go down to this restaurant and I'll be back. And it's okay to hold your place in line. And especially because you just get to talking to people and you get to know people after that. So, you know, you would go have a beverage here and there at a bar. You have to. You have to do some things out there.
Again, you kind of have to have a plan. I mean, look at the weather that day. I mean, we're avid outdoors people, or at least I used to be out here in Washington. There's the 10 essentials. You don't need 10 in the line for Pearl Jam. But you need like 3 or 4. You need some sunscreen because, you know, we're from Seattle. We don't react well to sun.
Water.
Some water. Comfortable shoes. And if we could manage it, I think we did, is, you know, we had a car parked close enough for, we came up, dropped off a couple of, you know, low back folding chairs, which God almighty helped because sitting on that concrete sucked.
Yeah. And a great side hustle if somebody wants it, just go buy cases of water and, you know, a little dolly and with some ice and just walk by those lines when this happens and sell a bottle for $1 or $2. You will empty all of them very easily. And, you know, we paid for that all day long because it was like, water, water.
Yeah.
You're waiting out there. But it was great. You know, we met so many cool people waiting in that line. We met people from like Sweden and the Netherlands.
Who did we meet from Sweden?
Tommy Four is our
Tommy
guy.
Tommy Four's baby. We hung out with him all damn day in line and then all damn day at the show. And we still know that character to this day.
Yeah. And we hung out with him on Friday as well. Is he the dude came all the way from Sweden just for the, again, like we talked about the demand for these. Like
he's crazy. He traveled from Europe to see a show. Outrageous.
We, you know, folks from those places, the Netherlands, England, Japan, Toronto, Vancouver, Minneapolis, Albuquerque. We met people from all over the world and everyone was just cool. You know, there weren't talks about politics. You know, this was still back during the Trump crisis, as we like to look back as. Nobody talked about that. You know, there was the Jesus guy that comes by and screams at people in the microphone once in a while, but that was about the worst of it.
And I do not have the ability to not fuck with that guy and try to shout him down when he has a megaphone. I will always go at them for a little while because fuck that guy.
Yeah.
Guys, women, whoever it is. Sorry. Side note.
Yeah. Not a fan of them either. It's like, don't yell your stuff at me. But okay. So we're out there all day. Finally, I think it was probably about 5 o'clock is when they opened the gates and they actually let us start going into the venue. Something like that. Because I remember we were out there for like 8.5 hours. I mean, it was such a long time.
I think before they let us in, I may be remembering it wrong, but I think they came out and sort of did it like an ID check and gave us a wristband if we were 21 or over, just to get that sort of process out of the way.
The process a little faster.
Before, you know, you get in there and everyone, there's limited gates and all that. So I do think they came out and did at least that, you know, try to speed things up a little bit.
Yeah. So they open the gates and start letting us in. And it kind of reminded me of like being at like the local swimming pool, like when you're a little kid, when they say, walk, don't run, because, you know, everybody's just like wanting to take off running to sprint because that's your opportunity. You go.
Oh, I thought you were talking like a little kid, like peeing in the pool. This is very different.
Yeah. I don't think anybody peed out there.
All right.
Yeah. And so, yeah, very fast walking, and you're kind of going through all through the stadium. They lead you down the big stairwell, and then from there it's wide open. It's just like you just run, and whoever – they just start lining up right on along the wall. And, you know, by that point for us – and again, we waited out there eight and a half hours, and we – on the first day, we probably got about the eighth row back, something like that.
About, yeah.
I think – maybe dead center, maybe a little closer towards McCready's side.
We definitely like lean to McCready. Yeah. I prefer that spot because he's that's a fucking wizard on guitar.
That's where I always aim for as well. And
well, that's another point, though. You know, if it is general admission and there's a floor that's general admission, have a conversation with the people you're with of what are you shooting for? Where do you want to be on the floor? Because like you say, you know, they tell you not to run. You do run. While you're running, you hear people yelling at you not to run. And, you know, there's other people pushing a little this, a little that, going for their spot. So have the conversation. At least identify a general rally point.
Yeah, agreed. Yes. So we got in. We claimed our spot. I think Tommy was with us. It was kind of just the three of us for that point.
Yep.
And then we started – we took turns. It was like, okay, you have a little bit of a window there from 5 till – the show was starting at 8, I'll guess, and say 6:30-ish, where there's some flexibility to come and go. So you go get some bad food. That's about all they have there. Which, I mean, I had like snack bars and sandwiches on me all day, but that was an opportunity to go eat food. But that's when I cut off. I basically stopped drinking water not long after we first got in there because I didn't want my gut to be too full for the show. You know, and having to go to pee. Because if you have to go pee during the performance and you're up where we're at, you're not getting back to your spot.
I disagree with that, but I play it a little bit differently. I will wear a bright, kind of very noticeable shirt, typically Hawaiian shirts, very bright. And I've got this ridiculous beard. And my strategy is go out away and tell everyone, I'm coming back, I'm coming back, I'm coming back, I'm coming back, I'm coming back. And then try to find your way back that same path. And I'm pretty recognizable. They're like, yeah, he was here. Yeah, he was here. Yeah, he was here. Hmm. I have 100% capture rate on getting back to my spot. I've never not.
I've literally never done that. I just don't want to be that guy trying to squeeze past folks and doing all that. But actually, that does make sense, though, if you're talking about that, of like, hey, remember me.
And actually, the best option is you should go forwards, go to the rail, and then across, because all those people on the rail are going to be at the rail when you come back on the rail.
Yeah.
That is your best chance for it's straight out, it's straight back in, and you will encounter the same people.
Well, that's a good point. So I held my pee for a really long time.
I peed the pool.
That's what we did. Yeah, you know, we hold the spot for each other and make sure we're not losing it because people start swarming in around you really quick. We sit down on the floor. Another thing that was awful was they had the damn roof closed when we first got in there, and it was hot. It was so hot. And, I mean, people were screaming to, like, any, you know, tech employee that was working on the stage.
Open the fucking roof.
Open the fucking roof! You know, we don't have tons of water, and I think maybe about an hour before the show, they finally opened it. And the cheer from the crowd, I mean, you would have thought the band was coming out, but it wasn't. It was because, oh, my God, we actually have some fresh air. Like, thank God.
Well, and that's another thing. If you're sitting, you know, a lot of people take a seat on the concrete for a while. And then eventually there's this momentum to stand up. And you got to kind of be prepared for that, too, because you take up, I don't know, maybe a third of the space you would standing. If you're sitting, you're just taking up more space. And ultimately you end up taking, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 paces forward when, you know, all the people in front of you finally sort out where they're standing. You got to be ready for it.
Yes. And so I basically never moved whatsoever from about, I don't know, 6 o'clock all the way until the show ended. And it's tough. You can sit for a while, but, you know, people start crowding in around you. It's also interesting to think about this because this was back before the COVID times. So people are shoulder to shoulder. And sometimes a person in front of you is 4 inches in front of you and so close that you can feel people breathing on the back of your neck sometimes because they're just that close. I have friends that they would never, ever do something like that. You know, that would give them so much claustrophobia. And it's not my favorite, but I will say, though, that there's a little bit of a – I enjoy being in large crowds like that. And – but I don't always want to talk to everybody around me. Like, I just kind of like the – I don't want to call it like a tribe feeling, but like the communal feeling of like we're all there for that same reason and we're all in for this same.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
We're chasing the same high.
Yeah. I liked kind of being packed in and in with other folks like that. I don't know why. It's a weird thing.
And an example of someone who does not want to do that is my wife, Joanne. She had tickets to that show and she ended up having seats and she sat with some other friends. It's just not her thing. She's done it. She stood in line for 9 hours before Bruce show. And all that, you know, shit, that was 8, 9 years ago, younger then, and it was more doable, but it's no longer on our list of things to do.
Yeah. So it was finally time, what we wait for all day. And what I will say is once the show starts, as miserable as you've been all day long and as tired as you are, as soon as that show starts, you forget about all that. You forget about the dehydration. You forget about how tired you're. You know, your legs are and all the stuff. And it was time for the show. 33 songs is what the band played on the first night. They played for about 3 hours, if I remember correctly. The show went on probably about 8:30 and yeah, got done about 11:30. The set list. I mean, one thing that I love about them and as well is that, you know, Eddie doesn't, they keep track of every single song that they play at every show for history. And allegedly what happens is they'll go back, Eddie will go back and look at like, well, what did we play the last time we were in that city, you know, 3 years or 5 years ago or whatever. And they'll try to not replicate that. And they'll try to mix it up like, oh, we've never actually played that song at there. And so it's very creative. So the first show, the first night was way different than the second night. In my opinion, I thought the set list the first night was actually better. I liked it better, even though I think the second night was actually a better performance. But we can kind of go into that. They started with Long Road. I'll be honest with you, I don't even remember that. Like, I thought the show actually started with Release, because that's what I remember. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the song where he's talking to like to his father and like hearing the whole crowd doing the Release, man. And oh, man, just the goosebumps that come in with that and the hair that just kind of stands up. It's like it didn't matter everything you went through that day. Now you're in there in the moment. And we're watching one of our favorite bands, and that's a song from my favorite album. What were some of the other songs that they played on that first night?
You can't go wrong with Go.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the fast, hard-driving ones. I really, really do. I mean, Elderly Woman, great song and all. It's a little slow. I prefer, like, my favorite Pearl Jam song is Blood. You don't get any harder and faster than that one.
Oh, interesting. I thought it was...
That's intense.
Yeah.
That's the opposite side of the coin.
Yeah.
But it's Blood for me.
And I don't know if they didn't play Present Tense that whole, either one, did they?
They did not. I didn't see the damn thing until L.A., I think about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Of course they didn't play it here.
Yeah. Well, I still love you guys, even though I didn't play it. They played my favorite song at the first night. They played Black. Black, for me, anytime that I get to hear Black played live, whether if it's Eddie solo, but she doesn't play it solo all that much. A huge moment that I remember with them playing that was, you know, by August of 18, I had been through quite a bit over the past year, year and a half leading up to that. A woman who I had dated previously had very unfortunately passed away in the fall before that. And I'm still kind of reeling from that. And while we weren't, it wasn't like, I'm not going to go too much into that, but while it wasn't like a long, long relationship and whatnot, it was still somebody that I cared about. And I was still kind of reeling from that a little bit. And when she passed away, we hadn't been seeing each other for a while. So it's not like, you know, this was someone who passed away while I was seeing her, and we weren't meant to be together. And like, we both understood that, but something about that song, it brought it out of me, man. And that was my first night that I can remember of like really crying hard. Yeah. And what I also remember is like, you were standing next to me and I had my arm around you for that whole song. And I sang myself hoarse during that song. And I was bawling my eyes out. And I remember, and I feel bad for it now, but like, I was squeezing the fuck out of your neck. But you're such an amazing best friend that you let me do that. And you knew what I needed. And like, I don't know if you knew at the time that that's kind of what was coming out of me, but you knew that I was hurting, that meant a lot to me. And I was clutching on for dear life, man. And I mean, that's what I go to those concerts for, is to have those experiences. Like doing that in the car while we're sitting next to each other, or if we're listening to a record at the house, it's not the same.
I mean, I'm there for you, straight up. I mean, that's the thing about music for us. You know, it checks all the boxes. It brings up different emotions. There's different memories associated with different songs. And yeah, they can fuck you up.
Yeah.
They can fuck you up. At the same time, you know, we've also had, you know, the joy of singing at the top of our lungs for happy thoughts and times. And it's just, that's what does it for us. It's the high we're chasing. And part of it, there's a trough every now and again.
And to talk more just about like how great and amazing other Pearl Jam fans are, like the folks that were standing right behind us, like when that song was over, like lots of people were like patting me on the shoulders, like, it's going to be all right, bud, you know, that kind of a thing. And they didn't know what I was going through. I didn't tell anybody anything. They probably thought my girlfriend broke up with me last week or whatever. And but that's the communal thing that you get from going to a show like that. So. So yeah, so that was one of the songs that, you know, did so much for me. They played all the hits. They always do. You know, they played Even Flow. They played Given to Fly, which was great. And then they ended the first set with Porch, which, you know, go all in. You know, that, yeah, exactly. You're doing the first down mark there. Time to go in, you know, screaming those lyrics together and screaming it with 50,000 people is just, it's a feeling that you have to be there again. I feel like I keep saying that a lot, but you got to be there to experience it. Another big favorite song of mine, and there they were throwing that out. And it's one that they play a lot, you know, and thankfully that they do. Oh yeah, and then one other thing I forgot as well about Even Flow was Eddie told a story about how that song was actually about back in the early 90s when they were had just written that song and they were still a young, fresh band, and he was hanging out in Pioneer Square a lot, that apparently there was a homeless man who lived down in Pioneer Square that Eddie became friends with.
If I recall correctly, he'd bring him a sandwich every day.
Yeah, and I don't remember what the guy's name was anymore, but he told this story in between, and he tells a lot of really fun stories and a lot of meaningful stories in between the songs as well. And yeah, I don't think anybody, none of us had ever heard that before, that that's what that song was actually about. And so, yeah, he dedicated it to him. And, you know, he said just he would come back from tour and he would always see that guy. And like you said, he'd bring him a sandwich and they'd talk until, unfortunately, he just came back from a tour one time and the guy just wasn't there anymore. And, you know, who knows whatever happened to him, and Eddie never saw him ever again. Well, so then, so the first encore happens, you know, not just one for this show. And this is another very big bright spot that made me extremely happy. Eddie came out solo by himself. And before he played the song, he talked about, you know, his family lives there. And he said, hey, I'd like to dedicate this next song to Seattle teachers. And they went on a little bit about like one of the teachers for one of his daughters and how much impact that that teacher had meant for his kids and all the respect that they had. And they brought her out onto the stage, which I thought was like a very, very touching moment. And this lady came out and, you know, Eddie and just his wife and all them were like, thank you so much for everything you do. And everyone, please give a bow to all Seattle teachers and all teachers everywhere. Like, they deserve a lot. You know, they teachers go through a lot of shit. They deserve more money and all that. And then he launched into We're Gonna Be Friends by the White Stripes. Walk together again. You and I are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that you are gonna be friends. Trey Smith right here. Marsha Lovey right here. Let's hear it for Seattle's teachers. And that, to me, I mean, Jack White is one of the few musicians that actually sits above my list, above Pearl Jam. Like, I could, and you know, I have in front of Andy gone on and on and on about that.
In a room.
I would. But the reason that he was playing a White Stripes song that night was because just a few days later, Jack White was coming to town just right next door at the WaMu Theater to play. And so then it was kind of like, ooh, I wonder if Jack will play a Pearl Jam song, you know, when that song, you know, when his show happens. And
Breathe got me. Breathe got me at that show. That was, again, the slow ones aren't always my jam, but they're ones that get me. There was something in that song that just, that to this day still gets me.
And then, so right after that, they followed it up. They brought out Brandi Carlile, and they did a Brandi Carlile cover. The full band played Again Today by Brandi. And I think she was wearing, like, kind of like the big Brandi jumpsuit things that she was wearing back then. Yeah. And this was, you know, Brandy's enormous right now, but she wasn't quite to this level back then.
She's a local celebrity.
Yeah.
Big artist. Locally, for sure.
Definitely well-known. But this, you know, kind of catapulted her, I would say, and brought her to many more people's attentions, and very, very much respectfully so. You know, like, Jack White has talked about her as well. He's like, I love her music because, like, I can tell she's real and she means it, you know, the things that she's talking about. And If I'm being honest, I started looking into Brandi Carlile a little bit more after that, because I was like, well, if they brought her out, she must be pretty legit. So that was a really beautiful song. And then they kicked into the rock again. So they did State of Love and Trust. And then they ended the second set with Rearview Mirror, which, again, the first down sign again. we're out in the crowd. You have to understand the level of tired that we were at this point. But also, it's like the adrenaline just carries you through. The rockers were screaming and we're yelling with them. We know all the words, thrashing up and down.
And at this point in the set, you know it's coming to an end. You know, you're getting closer to the end. You know, we're, you know, 2+ hours into it. You know, they start playing these songs. You know, we know where it's heading.
Exactly. But you always still hope, you're like, but just hopefully just one. Hopefully just one more. Especially when they're getting towards the end of an encore. You're like, ah, shit. You know, it's like, I think they'll come back for another one, but who knows? And they did. So for the second encore, thank you. We were so happy for that. You know, they played Better Man. They did a little bit of Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd, which was pretty, didn't see that coming. That was great. I've Got a Feeling by the Beatles. I don't think I've ever seen them play that, even solo with Eddie or whatever. But again, another one of the ones that just hits it for me, they played Alive. And Alive is another one of those. Alive and Black are like at the top of the list for me for just like the most memorable. So I got two of my three favorites all in the first night. And I was like, I don't know if this can be beat. You know, Alive is one of those songs that, you know, I just put out there. Like when I, every year when I have my sobriety anniversary, it's one of the songs that I listen to. And I usually cry listening to it because it's, I'm still here. I can't believe it. This is still happening. And that song just charges me and it just gets me through. But taking myself out of it, though, to be in the crowd, you've got to be there when it gets to the point when the song where they go, yeah, yeah. And everybody just chants like that. And everybody's screaming, I'm still alive together. It's bringing the hair up on my neck right now. Just thinking about that. And
ended up on my own.
Yeah, all these years later and all this, the stuff we've seen together, I'm still sitting here next to you going like, we got to experience that. Like, do you believe that? You know, we got to see you live at a home show in the fucking eighth row. Like, yes.
Then one that always stands out, I don't give a shit which band plays it. It's Rockin' in the Free World.
As we've mentioned before.
It's, I hate to use the word grunge, but it's sort of alternative rock sort of anthem. If you were a band, you know, and liked or listened to Neil Young, I mean, it just, it hits, and it hits well.
Yeah. Keep On Rocking in the Free World. You know, I think everybody knows the backstory about that, how he became Uncle Neil to the guys from Pearl Jam in the 90s. They always do that song very well justice when they play it live.
And they were Neil's backing band on, what was it, Merkinball or Mirrorball album?
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I mean, they're tight for sure.
Oh, and I don't think it's that song. I think it's Alive when Eddie runs out and hands, empties a bottle of wine to everybody in the front row. I think it's usually during Alive that he does that. Because the band kind of goes into a long prelude and they're just jamming out to it. And then he'll, because he has his security guy give everybody plastic cups. It gets everybody just a little drop.
I didn't get a glass of wine.
Well, go spend all night out for 2 days camping out, bud. You can go get that wine. Although I don't think he did it during. I don't know if they do that after COVID anymore. Actually, they didn't do it when I saw them at Ohana.
They didn't do it at Ohana since I've seen them too.
Yeah, but then you know the show finally had to come to an end, and the way they do it quite often in a song that nobody knows any of the lyrics to and nobody cares, Yellow Ledbetter. And the show ended with MacReady just kind of sitting down on his own at the front of the stage. You know, at the very, very end of that song, the band was gone. He threw a touch of Little Wing into it. And the show finally comes to an end. And it's like 11:30 at night. And we were, about 14 hours we had put into it there. My adrenaline afterwards was just, pupils dilated, like basically just like screaming, like, holy fuck, can you believe it? We just experienced like, that's what it's like. Like I look like somebody who.
It's emotional and verbal vomit. It's really what it is.
It is. Yeah. Not making sense. You know, and you don't just go home and like, okay, I'm tired. I think I'll just lay down and go to bed. That's not how that works. Your adrenaline takes hours and hours to come down. And like,
well, if you're like us and you appreciate it like we do, that's a consistent thing throughout a lot of, you know, the shows we're going to talk about over this whole podcast. It's a consistent thing. 2, 3, 4 in the morning. It's like, I'm not asleep yet. I don't think I'll be going to sleep anytime soon.
Sometimes we'll just call each other.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the show or whatever.
I think the sun's coming up.
Yeah. That was my experience with that, you know, late night, and that was night one. So based on that, you know, we're pretty far into this podcast, and I think we should make this a two-parter, and we'll come back and talk about kind of the rest of the week, and we'll talk about night two of Pearl Jam. How's that sound to you?
Works for me.
Okay, we'll catch you on the next one, folks. Thank you.
Peace out.
And that's the podcast.
That was so white.
Yeah, the mission is coming to a close. Better run back to your seat. We've been biding our time, looking for a